We'll call the meeting to order. One of the reasons I waited a little bit is, Alice, I'd like to thank you for your 4 years of service. Now that you're in the minority, you can do what I did and come late every day. But I'm sure you won't. So this is a thank you to you from those that worked with you, and we appreciated everything you did. And you were fair, and I'll try to be as fair as you were. You bet. The clerk will take the roll. We're not going to call it out. There are no minutes to approve. But I thought what we'd do is we'd start introductions first, and we're going to start from the most important people to the lesser, so we'll start with the two pages. Because without them, the stuff wouldn't be here. We'd all have to get our own stuff. So if you'd come up and just tell us who you are, where you're from. And
My name is Karen Rudine, and I live in Lionel Lakes with my husband and two kids.
Hi, I'm Michelle Kotek, and I'm originally from Oklahoma.
Thank you. And then if the DFL and Republican staff want to start, Nancy, if you want to start.
I'm Nancy.
Larissa Fisher, research for capital investment in higher ed.
And then if the House staff, if you want to.
Corinne Zewers, House fiscal staff for transportation and capital investment.
I'm Deb Dyson from House Research and work with capital investment and local government issues.
Okay, then we'll start from the end and just. Yep. You don't have to tell us why you're here. Just
nope. Kurt Bills, Rosemount and Apple Valley.
Dan Fabian, District 1A, Rose Hill, Kitson, part of Marshall County and part of Kitson or Pennington County.
Pam Myra, two-thirds of Burnsville and the downtown area of Savage.
Hi, Chris Wazinski, Lyon County and Redwood County.
Good afternoon, King Banyan from District 15B, the eastern and northern parts of St. Cloud and Haven Township.
John Creasel, District 57A, which is Cottage Grove, Newport, South St. Paul, St. Paul Park, and Great Cloud Island.
Representative Peggy Scott, I represent 49A, which is Andover and Ham Lake.
Cindy Fields, Legislative Assistant to Representative Dreskowski and Chairman House.
Larry House, Chairman of the Committee, and hope I can do it. Alice Alliston.
Ryan Blodgett, Committee Administrator.
I'm Alice Houseman, I represent
Rick Hansen, South St. Paul, West St. Paul, Mendota Heights, Mendota, Lilydale, and a little bit of Egan.
Bev Scalzi, I represent Little Canada, Vadnais Heights, Southern Shoreview, Eastern Roseville, all of Gem Lake, and these are five suburban cities directly north of the capital, 7 miles.
Bud Nornis, I live in Fergus Falls, represent District 10A, which is the western half of Otter Tail County.
John Ward, I am Chairman Howe's neighbor. Up in Brainerd, Baxter, Crosby, Arrington, Nisswa.
Karen Clark, I represent three inner city neighborhoods, Phillips, Stevens Square, and Whittier, in the heart of Minneapolis.
Jeff Hayden, District 61B. I am just south of Representative Clark's district, of what we like to call the Midtown section of Minneapolis.
Mm-hmm. And I'm Lyndon Carlson. I represent all the city of Robbinsdale, most of Crystal, about a third of Golden Valley, and a little bit of New Hope.
And Representative Dabrowski, since you're the last one here, you bring coffee to the next meeting.
Thanks, Chairman House. Steve Dreskowski, I'm from the southern suburbs of Mazeppa.
Maury Lanning from Moorhead in northern Clay County.
Sorry, Maureen, I missed you. We do have some rules in the packet. You can look at them. They're not going to be enforced with an iron fist at all. I think we have a 24-hour limit on or amendment rule, but feel free to bring one in the day of. If you just pick up the phone and say, you know, I got this amendment, but we're busy trying to get the language right, and we're coming with it, and give us a hint what it is, and it's just not a problem. We'll just start with something simple, and it's kind of what different committees have had over the years. So if you see something in there that you disagree with, just let us know, and we'll make some adjustments. So with that, I think we'll get started right away. We're just going to try and learn why this committee's here and what its purpose is and how we do that. And if I hope I pronounce your name correctly, is it Ms. Greider? Greider?
Yes.
Good. If you could come up. Identify yourself and to the microphone and tell us why we're here and what we do.
Well,
Thank you. It's quite a tall order. Chairman House and members of the committee, my name is Gay Kreider. I see a few familiar faces here from last year. I am the Capital Budget Coordinator at Management and Budget. I've been with the state not quite 2 years now, so I've gone through one capital bonding cycle. My job involves, at the beginning of the summer or even late spring of the year preceding a normal bonding year, which is typically even numbered years, we will start gathering the capital budget requests, both from state agencies and local governments. We start coordinating those, processing them, getting them ready to go over to the legislature for the preliminary required filing of capital budget requests by July 15th. Then we work through the fall refining those requests, working with the governor on his or her capital budget initiatives. Then we go into session. I monitor what is going through both houses of the legislature on capital bonding. And then once capital bonding is enacted, then I have an ongoing role with all outstanding capital bonding appropriations to work with both agencies and local governments to get that money spent and help them understand the statutory, constitutional, and tax-exempt bonding IRS regulations that limit the spending of that money. So in a nutshell, that's what I'm doing. And I was very kindly invited here today to give many of you new members an overview of the capital budget process. That's going to prove to be very interesting this year, because normally this is what we call an off-year bonding session, meaning normally we would have a good-sized bonding bill in 2011, which we did, and then this would be normally, not always, save for emergencies, but as we all know, the governor's going to be proposing a bonding bill, and there's already been some bonding proposals, bills submitted, so I wanted to talk to you about that process and answer some questions. So let me just get set up here. Now, I have a PowerPoint presentation which I will go through, which all of you should have copies of, and I am happy to entertain questions at any point. We have two presentations that we prepare in management and budget. One is the capital budget process, which is my area of expertise. The other is more what I would call debt management, in which normally our assistant commissioner for treasury and debt management would come in and present to you on that, talking more about how capital appropriations turns into actual bonding, what the municipal markets are like, how we size our bonds, and some of those questions I can answer. Some of them I think are best left, and just given time constraints today, we've got plenty of material in the capital budget area to talk about today. I'm going to recommend that we save that for a future session when our new assistant commissioner for debt management will be on board, and she will be joining us at the end of this month. Oh, good. Thank you. Okay, the goals of our capital budget process is to create a standardized description of a narrative for state agency and local government capital projects to facilitate decision making. To that end, in June, we send out capital budget instructions to local governments, and we have them load their capital budget requests into our capital budget system so that we have a standardized narrative for each of the projects, description of each agency, its strategic plan, and then a narrative and a budget for each of its requests. We have a less formal request that we send to local governments for them to use so that in that way the requests are standardized and comparable as much as possible.
Mm.
Now, as I mentioned a bit earlier, major capital budgets are typically presented for consideration in even-numbered legislative years. So that would have been the legislative session that ended in 2010. Emergency capital budgets, flood hazard relief, that sort of thing, that's typically considered in odd-numbered years. But again, that's just what's typically done. And there's no reason why you can't have a larger bonding bill in odd-numbered years. Capital budget process is guided by the state constitution, Article 11, Section 5, and a number of state statutes, and we'll discuss each of these statutes. Section 16A, 11 talks about the timetable in which the capital budget has to be submitted to the legislature. 16A, 86 talks about how the state government can make capital grants to local governments, political subdivisions. And then 16A502 is the full funding requirement for capital projects, meaning non-state or other non-capital commitments to capital projects. The constitutional requirements, as they have been interpreted by bond counsel for many years, are that projects must be publicly owned. That's typically not a problem. Where this does create problems, which, not that they can't be solved, but where this does create a problem is when local governments come in basically as sponsors for what are grants to nonprofits, such as cultural institutions. The Schubert was an example. The McPhail was an example. In cases like that, we have to create the requisite public ownership, typically by having the nonprofit enter into a long-term lease of the facility to the sponsoring local government, which then either leases the facility back to the nonprofit or they enter into some kind of management agreement. The expenditures must be of a capital nature. That means typically acquiring land and buildings or major improvements to buildings. And how this ends up tying into the capital budget process is I and bond counsel monitor capital appropriation bills very carefully, looking for evidence of expenditures that are not going to be bondable. For example, last year, corrections came in with a request for some armor, the state telecommunications project, but some of that was determined to be bondable and some of that was not, because it's really more in the nature of equipment. So that's just an example of something we have to watch out for in appropriations. It must be for a public purpose and it must be clearly set forth in law. Now, where that comes up is in the way that appropriations are written. Even if something is a capital expenditure under IRS rules, if it's not clearly set forth in the appropriation, for example, if site acquisition is not clearly set forth in what the money can be spent for, it can't be spent. And so every bonding year you'll see people coming in with technical amendments to their appropriations because they realize they didn't quite define the project as broadly as they needed to. Statutory requirements. And this comes into the timeline that you'll all become familiar with, although it doesn't apply in off years like this. For the regular even year big bonding cycle, the budget is submitted to the legislature twice. First, as a preliminary basis on July 15th, and then the governor's final budget is due on January 15th. And again, I emphasize that does not apply to this year because this is not a normal big bonding. The governor's budget must show both his recommendations and the agency's requests. And the items in the governor's budget must be presented in agency priority order regardless of MMB or the governor's recommendation. Section 16A502 imposes a full funding requirement to capital appropriations. There must be a showing that all project costs or all sources of revenue for the project have been committed. That's to keep the state from ending up in the position that we've committed money and a project is partly underway and then there's not enough local funding to finish the project. Section 86 addresses capital project grants to local subdivisions. given these by statute, the statute requires local governments to submit their projects to management and budget. Now, they are given a July 15th advisory deadline that they really can trickle in, and they do all the way up into and during the legislative session. A 50% local match is stated to be expected with certain exceptions. Now, the exceptions where there's not a 50% local match assumed are things like school district projects, disaster relief projects, local governmental projects that have an extremely low net tax capacity. But in fact, the legislature can determine not to require a match for any local government. Now this, I'm not going to go in detail here, but there's certain, we don't require a whole lot in our local government requirements for their projects, but we must ask them to state what the public purpose is that will be served, whether it will require new or additional state operating subsidies, whether the local government has already passed a resolution. Ultimately, they do have to get this yet, but whether at the point they're making their application, they have already had a resolution passed by their governing body in support of their project, and whether they have prioritized their projects if they're submitting more than one. A couple of other things can come into play in the capital budget process. The capital investment, formerly the debt management guidelines, project inflation, we ask agencies to include project inflation costs in their projects, and we post a project inflation assumption schedule on our website for every bonding cycle. Then MMB has a technical assistance role that we play in making sure that matching funds are really eligible and that they're actually committed and that projects are appropriate uses of general obligation bond proceeds. Here's the basic timeline for the even year bonding cycle. And again, this does not apply this year because there's actually no particularly statutory requirements for off year bonding bills. So, talking about the timeline that I would go into next year for the 2012 bonding bill, in April 11, we would issue instructions to state agencies and local governments. In May, we have agencies start entering their capital project request information into our capital budget system, CBS. Mid-June 2001, it's actually June 25, is the deadline for state agency submission. Local projects are requested to get theirs in by July 15th. We ask them to get them in earlier because July 15th is actually the deadline for the preliminary submission to the legislature of all projects that have come in. Mid-October is when we ask agencies to submit final materials, both budget numbers and project narrative information to us. we work through November talking to agencies, getting more information about their projects, high-profile local government projects that we think are going to get some traction in the legislature and have them come in and present to us. End of November, we issue our budget forecast and our debt capacity forecast. January 15th, the governor submits the 2012 capital budget to the legislature. By the end of May, in the session, the legislature adopts and the governor approves or vetoes, wide-eyed vetoes a bonding bill. And then after that, as I mentioned, it's just ongoing assistance to both agencies and local governments and getting grant agreements signed up and getting money out the door and making sure they're spending it for eligible projects. Now, the off-year capital budget, for example, like this year, is very different than an even-year process. The governor is not required to submit a capital budget recommendation, but he has indicated that he plans to do so. There's no formal solicitation process for state agencies or local government projects. Typically, we only entertain emergency requests. This year is going to be different, of course. We do not collect capital budget requests in any standard format, and we won't be producing the capital budget books that we do in regular bonding years. And we will be working informally with agencies to understand their capital needs. After the bonding bill is enacted, our agency's role is we set up the project appropriations counts in MAPS, the state accounting system. We inactivate requests that have some kind of special condition attached to them that must be met before the money can be appropriated. A very common example of this is local match requirements. There was a U of M project last year that needed to have a 5-patient study done. When agencies are ready to disperse money that does have a condition, we take a look to see if that condition has been met, for example, whether the local match is there, and then we activate those appropriations. We make sure that the full funding requirement is met, and we work with both agencies and local governments to ensure they are aware of and follow bonding requirements. Funding of capital projects. A lot of people are a little bit unaware of how this works. For projects, for example, in the 2010 bond renewal, we don't immediately go to the bond market and sell bonds to finance those projects. What happens is we borrow money from the general fund to finance those projects until we get ready to go to market with the bond renewal. When we do get ready to go to market, which is based on a number of factors, interest rates in the municipal markets, how much money we think we're going to need for bonding projects. We survey state agencies, and I should point out that whenever appropriations are made to a local government, they are made to the local government but through a state agency. So in that way, we are able to keep track of how those monies are spent, and those agencies are in charge of keeping track of how quickly those monies will be spent. When we get ready to go to market with a bond issue, we survey all the agencies to tell us what their capital spending needs are going to be for the near future, say the next 12 months, and that includes monies that they think are going to be granted to local governments for local government projects. And that's what we use as the basis to size our bond issues. Now, people can ask me questions at any time. You needn't wait till the end of that. But cancellation of capital obligations.
I do happen to have a question on the use of general fund dollars to upfront some of those capital projects. And the reason that I asked that question the last time we had a presentation from MMB, the forecast, that was the November forecast, showed a huge cash flow problem in March and April. And after the most recent forecast, we requested an update from it from MMB on that, and it hasn't come forward yet.
It has not.
I'm told that the reason it hasn't come forward is that Health and Human Services is having some difficulty identifying what their cash flows needs are. But that's by way of background. The reason I'm asking the question, are we going to encounter some problems with some of the projects that were approved last year relative to the upfront needs due to the cash flow problem that we're going to have for at least two of the next few months?
Ms. Greider, would that be something that you can answer today?
Not really. I can make a note to look at that and to speak to some people.
Okay, that would be fine. When she was referencing the upfront money from the general fund, that's why I was asking the question, and a part it would mean it would determine when you would be needing that money to upfront some of those projects, whether you'd need that money in April or March or April, and if the cash flow problems are still what they are. And the previous administration talked about actually was working on short-term borrowing to get us through that cash flow situation. So that would be another part of the question then, if we did have to engage in cash flow borrowing, would some of that be used for capital projects?
I'll look into that. I know we have that short-term borrowing facility in place with U.S. Bank. We've not had to draw on it at this point.
Yeah, and I understand that it wasn't the need was probably in March and April if they had to utilize that credit. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
There's two ways that capital appropriations can be canceled. What I'm going to talk about here is the statutory mechanism whereby capital appropriations that have gotten sufficiently old are canceled. This does not stop the legislature from legislatively canceling appropriations prior to that date. Let's see, the statute is 16A642. That statute requires management and budget to submit a list of projects to the legislature as of January 1 of every odd number year. So we just submitted a new cancellation report as of January 4th, which was the first working day of the new year, which by statute is required to list all capital appropriations, whether they're general obligation bond proceeds or general fund, which are more than 4 years old as of that January. For this year's report, that pulled in all appropriations from 2006 and earlier. What we are required to list on that report is balances in these capital appropriation accounts that have been neither spent nor encumbered. Now, for those of you who are unfamiliar with the encumbrance concept, we allow agencies to encumber in our state accounting system portions of appropriations for which they have incurred a contractual obligation in the future. So it's not money that's payable now, but it is money that they have undertaken to pay in the future. So we let them encumber that. Now, those monies are insulated from cancellation. So what shows up on the cancellation report are monies that have neither been spent nor encumbered. So at this point, there's not any kind of contractual obligation to pay them. These balances are not canceled automatically on January 1. What they do is they carry over until July 1, in this case of 2011, to give the legislature a chance to extend them if it deems that appropriate. Canceled balances go to repay state bonds. Now this year, in this year's cancellation report, I'm trying to remember, I think we canceled about $8 million worth of old projects. A little over $10 million. Now, capital budget does get tied into our state debt management system. It ties into the amount of debt service that we carry in our forecasts. Of course, debt that has already been issued, we don't issue any variable rate debt. So that debt service is known into the future, so of course that goes into the forecast and the amount of debt service that we have to pay in the coming years. For bonds that have been authorized in old bonding bills but have not yet been issued, we base future bonding estimates on estimates that agencies have given us on how quickly they are going to spend that money. For future bonding bills that haven't even been enacted yet, we make an assumption based on a rolling 10-year average of what bonding bill sizes have been in the past odd number of years and in the past even number of years. And right now, that rolling average is $775 million for even-numbered regular bonding years and $140 million for odd-number years. And, of course, we have to make guesses about where interest rates are going. We address bondability questions, as I discussed. We are two areas, capital budget and debt management. We work together on implementing bonding appropriations. We work with the Attorney General's Office and Bond Council when unusual situations come up that we haven't addressed before. And we also keep updated a number of publications. One of them is called After the Bonding Bill, which we send out every year after a big bonding bill is enacted, just reminding agencies of what their obligations are and advising them of new developments. We also have a publication called the Capital Grants Manual, which is useful for new staff and agencies and also for local governments who are unfamiliar with this process. Some big local governments are familiar with it, but some of the smaller ones who have not gotten a bonding appropriation are less familiar. Okay, that concludes my formal remarks, and I'd be happy to take questions.
Chairman, does the that rolling average, when you figure that, Does that count emergency bonding as far as that average, or do you separate that out as far as?
No, we count that. Ms. Greider, go through the chair. Since this is the first day, we're going to try and start out.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Doing it the right way. That's okay.
Chairman, that it does go through. It does figure into the average.
Okay.
The emergency.
What would it? Chair.
Representative Swiditsky, I have to look real quick to see your name tag because I don't have them all memorized yet.
Sounds good.
Okay.
Chairman, I would like to know what the average would be if you didn't use emergency bonding as part of that rolling average to figure what the...
Ms. Greider.
If you were going to use that.
I wouldn't be prepared to answer that question. I'd have to get back to you on that.
Then you could bring that back next time we...
I can.
If we have another meeting this year.
I can.
In the off year.
Or I can make a list of all these and get answers, and I can send an email to Ryan, and he can see that it's distributed
Excellent.
To the members of the committee.
Good. Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Chairman Howes. When was the last bond sale?
Ms. Greider.
Oh, I'm trying. Let's see. I might have that.
And Representative Hanson.
And Chairman House, is there any other bond sales scheduled in the near future?
Representative Hanson, I have not been told that yet. I think people are still adjusting to the change, and you know, we're communicating, and we have a new administration. I think it's going to take us a little while longer to get a lot of these pieces of information that we need. But Ms. Greider, did you find that, or I'm guessing
Chairman
August?
I don't have that on me. I know it was in the latter half of 2010 that we had our last GO bond sale, and we don't have another one scheduled.
Representative Hanson, before I ask you, I want to follow up with her myself. I was told the other day that we either normally don't or never have issued bonds during session. Went to the bond market during session. Maybe Representative Carlson knows that answer if you don't. Ms.
You know, that does ring a bell. And I think that's, I recall them being issued in summer and late fall, you know, June, July, October time frames.
Uh-huh.
And I'm sure there's a good reason for that, but I wouldn't be able to speak to that.
Representative Hanson.
Mr. Chair, I'm just asking these questions in case we don't have another meeting. I was looking at
That's very good. That's very clever of you. No, we, Representative Hansel, we will have a bonding bill. There are some issues dealing with language that we have to fix, and I think that has to come through this committee. So there will be some sort of bonding bill, and I'm sure that no one of the 134 members would take advantage and use that as a vehicle. Continue, Ms. Greider. Or Representative Bills.
Oh, sorry. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Greider, how is the eligibility determined then when you start looking at different issues for that cities or local governments bring up? Is there a board that determines that, and if the project is eligible or not?
Ms. Greider.
Chairman and Representative Bills, I'm not sure what you mean by eligible.
I believe you mentioned that the local governments they request, right? The someone comes to the state government requesting that a certain bonding takes place for a project, and then it could be eligible or could not be eligible.
I understand what you mean. The eligibility there is the only sort of litmus test that we put on these requests that when they come in is we make sure that they can legally be bonded for under IRS regulations and the state constitution. They have to be capital expenditures. So somebody, for example, there was a local government request last year for wind turbines, and if that had really gone anywhere, we would have had to look into whether that's actually an improvement to land or whether that's equipment, which we cannot legally bond for.
Thank you.
So, and I didn't make this point earlier. For anything that's not technically geo-bondable, that can always be funded with general fund cash. But as everybody knows, general fund cash is hard to come by these days.
We did get some information from our excellent staff. So, Ms. Dyson.
Mr. Chairman, I was on a side conversation, so I don't know who asked the question, but it was, have we ever had a bond sale during session? And in January 2009, there was a bond sale. Session had started, but it was before the forecast, and it was one of these unique windows of opportunity to do a bond sale during session because the budget situation at that point was stable and, or was known so that the bond sale statement could have clear information. Usually once session is started and budget stuff is up in the air, you can't sell bonds. It's a market issue. But it was in 2009 because there was a cash flow need in the fall of 2008 when the bond sales would normally take place. There were no municipal bonds being sold. Nobody was buying. And so the state wasn't able to sell bonds, decided not to try to sell bonds in the fall of 2008, but there was cash flow need, so that the first opportunity at the beginning of 2009, the state sold bonds in order to cover the projects outstanding that needed a cash flow. But it was a very different situation, and that's the only time that I know of where bonds have been sold once the legislature's in session.
Thank you, Ms. Dyson. Ms. Greider, you
want to? No, I was going to say that did ring a bell, but that is why we don't issue bonds in session, because typically we're either considering the operating budget or we're considering amendments to the operating budget to get the biennium back in balance following a forecast update. So that's why.
Then feel free to continue. I don't see any more questions. So were you going to go through the next packet, or was that you're saving that for next time?
I'm saving that for next time so that you can get a chance to get introduced to our new assistant commissioner, Kristen Hansen, who will be joining us at the end of the month and will be able to speak much more knowledgeably about some of the specific debt management topics.
So well, we thank might you again. Get out of here early today. Representative Ben.
Yeah, thank you. This is just one quick question. Thank you, Chairman. The term for an off-year capital budget is listed as for an emergency purpose. Can we define what emergency is, or is this just one of those that you know it when you see it?
Ms. Greider.
I should say there's nothing in statute that limits off-year bonding to emergencies. This has just been tradition. There's a requirement that a capital budget be proposed in even years. There's never a requirement that a capital budget bill be enacted at any time. But the tradition has been that we consider a big bonding bill in the even-numbered years and, quote, emergencies in the off years. But, no, there's no definition. And there's not any requirement that there ever be a bonding bill.
Representative Bannion, I think it's one of those instances where if it's in your neighborhood or area, it's an emergency. If it's not, it could probably wait. Representative Bannion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You're a very wise man.
I learned it from good people. Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, you know, one of the issues at times has been the availability of site visits. As you know, under Representative Houseman and previous chairs, or back when we had the old Appropriations Committee, and you may want to comment, I have no idea what your plans are, but often as projects are coming forward, the committee tries to make sure we've had an opportunity to visit that local campus or state park or whatever the situation may be.
Well, Representative Carlson, at this time I plan on following what the previous three or four chairs have done. I don't have a budget yet. A lot of it.
No, I understand. I was, when we were talking about projects coming forward, I was just saying that's part of the process that this committee has, that one of the reasons that it's a pretty busy committee at times, even though we've commented about how often you may meet the session, but it is very busy during the interim, and that's part of the groundwork that's put in place for these various projects in terms of answering some of the questions. And if it's an emergency, sometimes we've had site visits looking at what the problem might be, whether it was floods or whatever the situation might be, to help determine whether that's an emergency or not.
Good point. So there probably will be visits somewhere, probably on a Thursday or Wednesday or Thursday when you least expect it and you're already booked for something else, but that's the way it works.
Well, most of those are during the interim, however.
Well, some of us are busy in the summer, Representative Carlson.
Well, you live in fishing country, that's right.
Yeah, we do those things. So we have things, picnics to go to, parades to do, and even if it's not election year, we try to live life to the fullest.
Mr. Chairman, we have many of the same things in the metro area.
You do.
Not as much. And you like us to come up to your district to do...
Yes, I like you to come drive fishing through and spend your money as you're driving through and go right up to Purcell's and enjoy the territory, and then on your way back, stop in the restaurants and a walker, and we'll take care of you.
But the point I was trying to make was site visits become a part of the process for the committee when we look at these various projects. It doesn't surface as part of the legal description that was given by MMB today.
Yeah, the committee is a little different than other committees. I always like to think that this is a lot like the Environment Finance Committee. It's a committee that gets along reasonably well. We all kind of have a same focus, even though we're partisan, and it's just a little bit different. You're not cutting or spending in the real sense of the word, so it sometimes works better than other committees. But with that being said, I think we did okay today, and I don't know when the next meeting is going to be until I know when. And we have one more person. I can't remember your name. Fabian, Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Greider, I just have a question on when the bonds are sold and the projects are determined, what percentage of that money, is there some statistics, what percentage of that money gets out in that year, in the next year, and so forth, and how far out? I know there's a four-year limit on that, but can you give me a year-by-year breakdown? Thank you.
Ms. Greider. Mr. Chairman and Representative, that's an excellent question, and we actually have responded to that inquiry in previous years, and we actually have a spreadsheet that I can send to you to show what that historical payout has been, and I'll make a note to send that over.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you. I'm a patient man. And by the way, those site visits, we can do one in Roseau, and we'll get on a Polaris snowmobile and ride around.
Representative Fabian, is Roseau still in Minnesota?
Someone said they were from Little Canada earlier. I'm from Southern Canada.
Ms. Zors.
Mr. Chair and Representative Fabian, the MMB uses a cash flow model where 15% of the funds go out the first year, 30% the second, 30% the third, 13% the fourth, and 2% the fifth.
Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. But I think that may be a formula, but it's not actual because... I know for the last 4 years we have pushed every project to be ready, that we don't want to put them in the bill. So I know that at least when we first started this, though Tom Stinson keeps saying it's 15%, that the first year we tried it, it was up to 23%, and I didn't ever ask what the next year was. So you can improve that number of how much money gets out the door the first year if you push, push, push.
I would assume this committee might have a little leverage in pushing some of that. Can we do that? Do we have authority? Can we change the law?
Mr. Chair, it it depends on the projects that you authorize.
Oh. Thank you. Meeting's adjourned. Thank you.